Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the A10 Talk podcast. Sam Basil joined alongside Daniel Frank and David Porn. And folks, we are a week and a day into conference play. I mean, there's been some sparse days with no A10 basketball, you know, kind of few and far between. But I think we've had a pretty good, you know, the way that the men and the women's schedules have been balanced out, at least, you know, no more than like one or two days without, you know, any sort of A10 hoops. And we've been off to a pretty good start. I mean, like we said on our last podcast, the fact that, you know, we've all kind of resigned to the fact that, you know, we're a one bid league this year. Anything's open, and the league has responded accordingly. So for you two, overall reaction to first week of conference play, starting off with you, Daniel.
We know absolutely nothing about this league at all. There are, between the men and the women, 14 teams that are 1-1. And I feel like we're just going to have a bunch of just 500 teams this season. It's going to be messy. It's going to be silly. It's going to be ugly. And it's going to be beautifully chaotic.
And I would actually like to disagree with the one-bid league thing. I think there's definitely a path where Dayton can make themselves an at-large contender. And so I think there's a world in where they maybe lose just one, maybe two conference games, and then lose in the tournament, they can still sneak in, and then the winner gets. And so I do not think we're resigned to one bid league. I still think there's a path out of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, that you bring up, David, because Dayton is, you know, as of right now, the only 3-0 team in men's conference play. I mean, they started off pretty strong, you know, double-digit wins over Duquesne, Davidson, and then, you know, a 20-point exactly win over St. Joe's before heading over to, you know, to the Bronx on Tuesday to face off against Fordham. And those first two wins are, you know, even though it's in a conference that people have already, you know, kind of, you know, closed the book on for this year, I mean, those are really good wins. I mean, those are two teams, and, you know, we haven't even gotten to, you know, when they're going to play St. Louis, UMass. I mean, even Richmond has been competitive in non-conference this year. Those are really, really strong wins. So, I mean, for you, David, since you're the one that brought it up, this possible pathway, is this pathway for Dayton, you know, going 18-0, like, you know, something close to what we saw in the Obi Toppin season, or is it a bit more lenient? Is it maybe like a 16-2, a 15-3 season, and then finishing it out as an at-large team, you know, with a loss in the A-10 championship game?
I mean, I definitely think it's a lot cleaner if they win out. You know, I think that leaves a lot less to chance. But, I mean, they're getting healthy. I think right now, especially when they are a little more beat up, if they get a bad loss there, I don't think that kills them. So I definitely think that, again, assuming they do really well and, like, make it to the end of the tournament and, like, lose on the last day, lose in the final, I think then there's a path. Again, it's not easy. There's definitely a lot more scenarios where they are not an at-large contender, but I don't think I don't think it's a guarantee that just the conference tournament winner is going to make it. I definitely think Dayton has put themselves in a position where, you know, they can even afford one. You know, even if it's not just the loss to St. Louis, like, if they do get a bad loss, you know, maybe not like a LaSalle loss like last year, but I definitely think they can afford one or two non-perfect outcomes.
And so anything else that has really surprised the two of you before we kind of get into, you know, what my thoughts?
I feel like this is beating slightly a dead horse, but I'm disappointed. I guess I'm not surprised, but I'm disappointed in Loyola Chicago. I think we all had penciled them in preseason as an at-large team. And, I mean, obviously preseason, the expectations and conversations around this league were very different just in general. But, I don't know, just staring at them at 0-2, and, like I don't want to crap on GW. I love GW. This is a known entity. But, like, to lose by 10, giving up 90 points in your home floor, it's not a good look to, like, your first game in a new league. And I don't know. I hoped for better from them. And they have time to turn it around still, obviously. But I don't know. It's did not expect to see them down there.
Yeah, Loyola Chicago, I think it's fair for you to still be surprised and a little bit disappointed about. Because, yeah, you know, they went 6-6 in non-conference play. But and you know that's disappointing. That was underperforming for them in non-conference. But at media day, I mean, Coach Valentine was I mean I was there. Like, I was talking right to him. He was saying, look, we have the team that can run this league. We can go through. I am expecting us to be a top four league, a top four team in this league. You know, he was looking to be a double bye team, and yeah, he's got time, but to go 0-2 to start off conference play, I think is a bit, it's kind of overselling your team a little bit, not overselling, but you know, underperforming what you were expecting your team to do this season. I guess for me, my two biggest surprises, has just been Fordham's kind of shooting woes recently. You know, obviously they went 3-31 from 3-point range against Davidson in their opener. I hate to be that guy. I hate to be a homer, but I mean, this is a podcast where we can be homers a little bit. That was a pretty solid game for Fordham in every single regard, aside from shooting. I mean, defensively, they looked really good. They got some great stops. I mean, they were crashing the defensive glass pretty well. But I mean, just every time, and you know, they were moving the ball well. I mean, a lot of the shots that they were taking, in my opinion, were very smart shots. You know, you got the right passes, you made the right cuts. They just were not hitting, and that was a game where I thought to myself, you know what, that could really be just, you know, one of those fluke games that happens for everyone once in a while. And then against Rhode Island, I felt like they were still shaking off some of those jitters from Davidson. And that goes into kind of my second surprise, in that Rhode Island actually looked pretty good. It wasn't just that Fordham was struggling offensively on the other end. Malik Martin was, and even Breon Freeman, I know it hurts to say for the two of you. I know you don't want to hear this. Sam, I know this is just, you know, stoking the GW fire here, but I mean, he was looking really good too. I mean, he hit some pretty clutch shots. I mean, he pretty much put the dagger in Fordham on Wednesday night. But overall, their ball movement looked really, really good. And I think, you know, if there's going to be a sneaky team that, you know, it's not necessarily going to even reach a bye. I mean, they're a pillow fight team, but if, you know, a team that can surprise us with a win on the first or second day of the tournament, I think it could be URI. Moving down the line, I mean, speaking of GW, I mean, 1-1, I know the two of you have been a bit high on this team. You felt like maybe I've undersold them a little bit, you know, throughout the year. Could you talk about, you know, their 1-1 start and what you've kind of observed from that?
So the big issue with GW right now is their injuries, or mainly one key injury to EJ Clark, who started the season as their backup point guard, but ended up working his way into the starting lineup. And GW right now has two guards. They have two guards who both play 38 minutes a night, and it is not sustainable for a season to run like that. So they're really, it's not one of those things where they just don't have a guy performing. They do not have anybody on scholarship who can play the one or the two, other than James Bishop and Brendan Adams. So it's a tough look for the going forward. So I don't have a ton of optimism about necessarily like the wins and losses for GW. Right now, what I'm looking for more in terms of the GW season is individual performances, you know, putting out a good effort, you know, playing hard, putting on some fun performances at home, you know, the development of Max Edwards, you know, maybe James Bishop committing to come back for his fifth year of college with his COVID year, stuff like that. So I think our ceiling has pretty much been capped with this EJ Clark injury, and there really isn't much hope, especially like for a tournament setting, you know, having, hypothetically, if GW were to go on a run, having like four games in 5 days with two guards playing 38 minutes a night is not a recipe for success. So GW season is looking bleak right now.
Yeah, I think David kind of hit the nail on the head. I may be slightly more optimistic than David is on the wins and losses. I still... I still think GW has a chance to be around 500. I was chatting with you a little bit, Sam, before we kick this thing off. I feel like GW is the type of team that can, like, just, like, muck up a game and, like, just make it ugly. And, like on paper, this GW-UMass game on Saturday should be, like, featuring two of the top shooters in the league, should be, like, a game like the 80s and the 70s. It would probably be, like, 54 to 49 or something, like... And just some wacky A-10 mid-January kind of mess. And I don't know, I feel like no, GW's not a top four team. They're not a top 10 team in this league. But I still think that they can put out a respectable, I would be content with if they can hit 500, I'd be content with that.
Oh, I agree 100%. I was meaning more like, I know Daniel, me and you talked about them being potentially, you know, pushing for six or something like that, and being a team that we thought they were in the tier sort of below Dayton and St. Louis, and we thought maybe they were in that realm. I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that they aren't. I still think 500 is doable, especially with how volatile the A-10 looks and the way their schedule breaks down and who they're like we're playing twice. You know, I think that could definitely be a way for GW to hit that 500 marker, but I don't know. I'm more just looking for the positives and the little things than the wins and losses.
That's fair.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a really important thing too. I mean, as a fan, to like keep yourself engaged, you know, in games. I mean, not even just trying to like shut your eyes and avoid the problem, but more so just look, like, let's put it in perspective. Like, this is what our short-term goals should be now that we're not even thinking about playing for a championship, even though that looked, you know, far away in the beginning of the season. Now it's completely out of our way. I mean, let's look for some individual goals. And I think some other teams are going to be looking at that as well. And one team, you know, again, I think this is a team that can still string together a couple of really good wins in this conference and even contend, but you know, it's the reigning conference champs in Richmond. And I don't think it's that crazy of a thing to say in that maybe they should kind of just put all their eggs in one basket, that basket being giving Tyler Burton a clear path to the NBA draft. Does that sound kind of crazy? I mean, look, his last five games, you know, going all the way back from Clemson to their, you know, second game so far in A-10 play, 21, 29, 20, 21, 26. The dude, I mean, we've known since last year, is one of the best players in this conference. And it for the past 2 years, has probably had like the best shot since probably like Bones Highland of being a legitimate NBA draft pick. I mean, there are plenty of guys who can, you know, get contracts and work their way into the NBA over a couple of years. But Tyler Burton, I feel like, is the closest person right now to be, you know, straight up drafted. So if you're Richmond, I mean, what's your focus here?
I think Tyler Burton's good enough where you can compete with him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it just has to be like one of those G League showcases or something where you're just trying to prop these guys up on an NBA pedestal. I think the best way to do that is to have him be part of a winning team, because he's still going to be the guy. And if you just have him go out there and like do what he did on Wednesday and score 26 points pretty effortlessly, I don't see why that wouldn't catch the eyes of both the NBA and help Richmond win.
Yeah, I got to see Burton in person in Fairfax on Saturday. He's just such a fun player to watch. Like, he might be the most fun player to watch in this league. Like, I think effortlessly, David, is just the absolutely the correct word for it, because he just makes everything he does look so easy. And I mean, I am a huge fan of Richmond's offense. I love the modified Princeton offense. I just love the way they run it. It's such beautiful basketball. Seeing it in DC last March was so much fun. And I mean, this is a team I think a lot of folks have written off. And I think Richmond, and I've mentioned this a little bit before in previous episodes, I think I would honestly put more stock in Richmond right now than I would in a team like VC or St. Louis, even, if we're talking about like potential how they'll do in Brooklyn type of team.
Wow. And what about VCU? I mean, I don't know, because I think I'd have to agree with you there, because, I mean, VCU, I mean, not maybe not necessarily Richmond is absolutely better than them, but I mean, VCU has kind of been a weird team right now. I mean, 1-1 in conference play. They had a couple weird games like towards the middle there. What about them do you feel like makes them, you know, you're not as confident with them as maybe you have been in the past couple of years in the tournament? Because I've always seen them as like a threat, like yeah. out of anything, not maybe not the best team, but always a threat, a looming threat. And I don't really know if I see that out of them this year. And I mean, obviously you don't. So like, what put that into words for me?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think part of what I'm feeling is, and I've not been quiet. I'm still not sold on Duquesne, and so by extension, VCU's loss to Duquesne doesn't look great in my mind. I still am always of the camp, and I know I've said this preseason in our discussions, that VCU is never dead. They're like a character, like a villain you see in a movie. They're never dead till you see them die on screen. Like VCU is never fully dead and out of the picture until they're eliminated and there's no more games left to play. That being said, there's just, I don't know, they don't have that VCU it factor. I feel like that is one of the things that has made VCU so successful for so damn long in this conference, is they have the intangibles. They have the it factor. They have those types of things you just can't coach. And part of it, I mean, they've gone through a number of coaches, obviously, since they've been in this league. Not for bad reasons, because their coaches do well and then they leave. But like, they always just have a certain amount of just like, you know, it's VCU, and they come in with that swagger. And I feel like that's missing from their gameplay right now. And they look, I don't know, average, but they don't look like VCU. They just look like another A-10 team.
Mm. And so for, I mean, just like one closing thought on Burton that I just feel like is interesting is I feel like, because when you said that he's a player that you love to watch play, I totally agree. And I think the reason why is because his build is so, like, different from what we expect out of a star for the A-10. I mean, he's, in my eyes, I mean, he could be, you know, if he makes it to the NBA, he could be a perfect, like, reserve small forward. I mean, because he's big enough where he can like be really good on defense. He can defend the paint very well, but he's so fast and so good, like, you know, in his shooting stroke that he can just, you know, he could just catch and shoot from pretty much anywhere. Before we go into like what we're watching this weekend in a weird, in my opinion, strangely scheduled slate, there was a pretty interesting Mason women's result right before we got on this podcast. 49-45 over St. Bonaventure. St. Bonnie's fall to 0-2 in conference play, unlike their, you know, their men's basketball counterpart who are 2-0. And Mason improves to 1-1. Daniel, I know you were celebrating being, you know, 14th, you know, second to bottom in the conference, not the bottom of the conference, but a pretty interesting result from the bench. Could you kind of go into, you know, what happened tonight?
Yeah, it's funny. David may resonate a little bit with the story from it echoing that of Maxine Engel last year to a degree. But basically, Mason is dealing with some injuries right now on the women's side. They lost Sonia Smith, who has been a starting guard for sure. They've been rotating who's the one, who's the two, and who's the three, like, the whole season. And off the bench comes in Jada Brown. She had played a bit earlier in the season. She came in at the very end of the Dayton game, when Mason needed a three, and she was like the only one that I guess they felt comfortable shooting in that position. But she came in off the bench tonight just out of necessity and dropped 9 points, led all scorers as a walk-on in a road A-10 contest, and got Mason the dub. And shout out Jada Brown, because that's some impressive stuff to do. And that's the type of thing that makes you an A-10 folk legend around here. So I love that.
Nice. And so to kind of go off into our final section on this kind of quick recap podcast, what are your big highlights for this weekend on the men's and women's side?
Well, I mean, I think the St. Bonaventure St. Louis game is going to be a lot of fun. St. Bonaventure, a team that a lot of people, myself included, thought they'd be pillow fighting this year, you know, has come out flying in conference play. And St. Louis is a team that's kind of faltered. I don't think anyone would argue with me saying that St. Louis definitely has more talent on their roster, but I just think that's a really cool matchup where you see kind of the hot team versus the cold team and see what kind of comes through, either the talent or the hot streak, anything like that. I think that'll be a really intriguing matchup.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I'll give you a men's and I'll give you a woman's. I'm curious about Mason Loyal on the men's side. Two teams that are kind of weird. Mason's always weird. Everyone always thinks Mason's going to be better than they are, and then they do this. They do this every year. But curious how that game's going to go, what Loyal is going to do, how they're going to respond to being punched in the mouth. Let's be honest, Loyola Chicago has not been in this type of situation in Stanton. Like, obviously, they're in a different conference, but they've not been in this type of position, being 0-2 in a conference in quite a while, I would imagine. So this is a little bit of a gut check time for Loyola. And for Mason, didn't play a bad game on Wednesday against Bona. I mean, really took a couple jacking up threes that the Bonnies just knocked down the final couple minutes to pull that one out. I feel like that's a sneaky good A-10 Sickos game of the weekend. On the women's side, curious how Rhode Island versus LaSalle is going to look like. Rhode Island's coming off a fantastic dominant win over UMass. And Rhodey's looking like the cream of the crop right now, potentially, for the women, just based off of momentum. And LaSalle's a team that's really underperformed a lot. I think they've really fallen short of expectations. But if you're LaSalle and you're looking for an opportunity to right your ship and kind of be like, no, we still can contend in this league, that's a real game that I think could be really, really interesting between Rhodey and LaSalle.
Yeah, so for me, I think, yeah, I mean, I guess to go off yours, I mean, you know, I mean, Rhodey and LaSalle, definitely. I feel like on the women's side, it's a lot of like 1-0s versus 0-2. So, I mean, it's kind of like a weird pocket on the women's schedule. So, I guess, I mean, to pick one, I mean, I'll definitely go St. Louis, St. Joe's. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if St. Joe's can improve to 3-0. On the men's side, I'll definitely be at Fordham, St. Joe's. That's an afternoon matchup. Other than that, I mean, again, I think on this side as well, it's a bit tough. I mean, aside from St. Bonaventure, St. Louis, let's see if they can keep rolling here. It'd be interesting to see if, you know, Tyler Burton, I mean, I'll definitely be watching him a little bit to see if he can, you know, continue his 20-point streak. But if I can reach a little bit further, because I don't know if we'll be recording another A-10 Talk podcast by then, I would definitely recommend checking out, if not at least for the crowd, like just general vibe, Dayton Fordham on Tuesday. I think that is a must watch on the men's side. If not, I mean, I'm expecting a big turnout for Malachi Smith, a Bronx native. And also, I mean, it's just Dayton. You know, they big conference opponents draw big crowds for Fordham basketball. I think by no fault of their own, I mean, they literally went 12-1, right? Non-conference play. They haven't, the Rose Hill gym has not really been like super filled on the, you know, the court length sides. But against Davidson, with students home for Christmas break, every section was filled on all three sides that they're selling seats for right now. They filled the student section with just general admission fans, which I think is really promising for a game against Dayton. And it wasn't even like Dayton fans traveling well, or sorry, Davidson fans traveling well. They did travel well. They did take up what's generally considered like the away fan section. But I mean, the Fordham fans that came out for that, you know, a lot of alumni and just people from the area, it was impressive. And if they can do that with, you know, an increased student section now that they're back from break, I mean, there's a chance they might try and open up that fourth section. I don't know. I don't know what their kind of plan is, because they use it for concessions, which is kind of strange. But like, it'll be really interesting to see. So I definitely recommend people checking that out on TV and seeing like what Rose Hill, you know, really looks like when it gets like really packed. Something that actually Coach Ergo described as Rose Hell, which I think is really funny. I'm surprised.
That's great.
Like,
that is fantastic.
I had never heard that before.
Don't tell Rothstein. Like, don't tell Rothstein.
Yeah, don't tell Rothstein about that. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I'm surprised that no one's plucked out already. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, we're just in January. I mean, it's just getting started, and we're going to be here all the way through. So for Daniel Frank, David Korn, I'm Sam Basil. Make sure you follow A10 Talk on Twitter at A10 Talk. Check out A10Talk.com for updates on all of your favorite 15 teams on both the men's and women's side in college basketball. And until then, we'll see you guys next time.